Hello and welcome to the Wabi Sabi series podcast, unlikely conversations on uncomfortable topics. I'm your host, Michelle Cox, a corporate exec turned author who has recently written a series of books about topics we don't often talk about. Things like death, grief, not having kids, and the unexplained power doctors often wield over us. Apparently, some of my books have made some people feel a little uncomfortable, but I felt that I wanted to have far more conversations around weird, wonderful, and sometimes taboo topics. So I reached out to some interesting people and asked them just one question. If there is one topic that you'd love society to talk more about, what would it be and why? And what they've shared with me has been amazing. So let's dive in and see where the conversation takes us.
Is what we're scared of actually real, or are we making them up in our head? And if we are making them up in our head, let's talk about it to realise that actually it's quite funny.
Christine Kaur is a powerhouse and always fun to have a chat to. She's an executive coach and recruiter, CEO of both Chorus Executive and People Coach, director on the Hunger Project's National Board, and advisory council member, Future of Work Program, chaired by David Gonski. She's a leadership facilitator, presenter, speaker, author, and fits in being a mum with all of that as well. Christine's belief is that a business can only be successful when their people are successful. She founded Chorus Executive, a holistic talent management consultancy, over 20 years ago, and in the last 2 years started up People Coach, an on-demand career and executive coaching and development platform. She saw a gap in the market and felt that coaching should be far more accessible to everyone. Chris and I met at a conference a few years ago and have always had such liberating conversations. I'm sure this will be no exception. Chris, welcome to the show.
Thank you. I'm excited to speak to you today.
It's going to be fun, I'm sure. So, Chris, if there's one thing you wish society would talk more about, what would it be?
I wish that people would talk honestly about what really scares them.
Oh, I like that. So is that like fear in life, like generally, or when you say scares them, what do you mean?
Absolutely. I think I would love people to be able to openly discuss what frightened them in their world, in their decisions, in their life. As you know, I do executive coach, and I've got a real interest in getting to the underneath of people. And whether you're looking at different models or whether you're talking to people, ultimately it comes down to, as human beings, we do things for two reasons, right? Because of love or because of fear, or the search for self-satisfaction, or the search for security, right? So whatever language you want to use. But there's basically a yin and yang to that. And the more I do executive coaching, the more I think about the decisions I've made in my life, a lot of them come down to the things that I'm doing or not doing, it's because I'm scared. And if we could actually talk honestly about what scares us, what we're frightened of, I think we would be able to make braver decisions. I think there'd be less arguments. I think people would be nicer. I think there'd be less war. I think there would be a whole different way that we communicated with each other in the world if we could only be honest with ourselves and each other around what we're scared about.
Yeah, I love it. It's so true. And it kind of moves into that work a lot that Brené Brown does around vulnerability, right?
Absolutely.
So it's like letting people really see who you are, and that humanistic element, and actually letting the guard down and going, you know, I might look like I've got all my stuff together, but actually I'm really scared about this or whatever. So what are some of the things, if we delve into, you know, in your coaching space, I guess, because you are exposed to lots of different people from lots of different walks of life, what are the things that you see most common in terms of people being scared of?
It goes from a superficial level right down to a very deep level, right? And the superficial level will always be something like, I can't afford to lose my job. I'm the main breadwinner. And even if they're not the main breadwinner, you know, I can't afford it, right? And my first question always is what do you mean you can't afford it? Like, what does that actually mean? And we have this concept, for example, around money. I need to have this amount of money, this amount of security. it struck me one day that what reality is versus what perception is are two very different things. And this, I had this conversation with this lady, and she was telling me about how she already knew what she wanted to do in a job. Like, she knew what her next step was, but she had one child that had to finish school, and, you know, she needed the money. It was really important. She needed the money. I was like, okay, I understand that. And as we progressed in the conversation, she then happened to mention that they'd just bought their 11th investment property.
No mean feat.
Pretty good, I think. And I said, okay, so how much do you hate this job? She goes, oh, it's against every value, it's against everything, but it pays the bills. I said, okay. And I said, so you're staying in the job for what reason? I've got to get my kid through school. It's so important to get my child through school. I said, okay. So how much money is that? And she said, told me whatever amount of money it was. And I just said, just exploring, could you sell a property? Like, what difference would it make for an extra year or two if you had 10 investment properties instead of 11? Oh, I couldn't do that. I said, why not? And she said, oh, well, because Asian people don't sell houses. So that's number one. So there's one fear of looking stupid in front of all the other Asian people who are also killing themselves to get properties that they can't afford. But that's another thing. For people that can't see me, this is a podcast. I am Asian, so therefore I can say this. I don't sound it, I know.
Thanks for clarifying.
I realised I should say that. The second thing, this fear of not having enough money. Like, in what reality does 11 investment properties, and all right, let's say they're mortgaged to X percent, right? There's still equity there, I'm sure, that somebody has to work in a job that's challenging their values every day to put a child through school with 11 properties. So what are the fears? That fear is not about money. Like, her initial thing is, I need the money. But actually it had nothing to do with that. There's something really deep down about this real sense of scarcity within her. And if only we could have got down to that level to really understand that, maybe she could have been freer with herself to make different decisions where she could actually live her life. You know, and when you think about what's happening in our world, right, we're in the middle of COVID now, people are dying, people are getting really sick, you know, horrible things are happening. And do you want to be the one sitting there being really sick saying, and I stayed in that job for an extra 2 years so I could hang on to my 11th, you know, investment property?
It sounds absurd, doesn't it, when you say it like that clearly?
But that's what it is, right?
And yeah, and it's true.
Until you go through, and if we just have those conversations with people, if we could have them with ourselves, I think that's the interesting thing.
Yeah, and that's what I want to get into. So I'm going to ask you straight, what are you scared of, Chris?
I have been scared of so many things, and I am that person. You know, I have been that person. Those words of Chinese people don't sell houses, it's like Monopoly. Right? We don't sell. We buy, we don't sell. That's embarrassing.
Accumulate.
Absolutely. You know, it's what you do. So, you know, for a long time, my biggest fear has been lack of money. Like, I'm first generation Chinese. My parents have always been in, you know, worked, but also had their own businesses. They sacrificed a lot for me to go to private school and all that sort of thing. But, you know, if I didn't hear it at least once a day, the words, if you don't work, you don't eat, you know, I wouldn't have heard it 50 times a day if that makes sense. I don't know if that's the saying. So from a baby, I was brought up with, you know, you need to work, you need to eat, you need to work, you know, and if you don't have enough money, you won't eat, like you will die.
It's ingrained in you from a young age.
Ingrained, right? So not only have I got an incredible work ethic, which is actually can be quite damaging, right, to an extent, I also have this real fear of not having enough to eat. And that drove a lot of my behaviour, a lot of my decisions. Like, I was that person that stayed in actually a business relationship for far too long because I was scared of losing the money. Like, what would happen if I lost the money? And since then, I've been through GFC, I've been through business partnership breakup, I've been through all sorts of things, and each time I have lost money, every single time, it's funny what you fear happens.
The other law of attraction, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah. I've died. I've never died.
If you have a topic burning inside you that you'd love to talk more about and have a conversation with me, I'd love to hear from you. So drop me a line at hello@wabisabiseries.com. Let's head back to the chat. I was thinking about all the fears that most people have. So isn't it like the fear of dying, the fear of, you know, other things like spiders and flying and going to the dentist, I think is quite a big fear. And public speaking, remember? They're those kind of practical stuff. And I was thinking about just listening to you, like, what am I scared of? And, you know, on a minute sort of level, it's spiders. Like, I have this weird thing about spiders, and yet I lived in the desert. Like, I lived in Alice Springs for 6 years. So finally, I'm not scared of snakes, because actually I had a lot to deal with snakes, but spiders freak me out. I think the way they just kind of go uncontrollably. So that's the kind of, you know, little stuff. On a big spectrum, I've never had a fear about money, interestingly enough. And I've came from a very working class. I had no money growing up. And I think mum and dad instilled that into me about, you know, a really strong work ethic. But I just always know that I'll be okay. Like, even if I lose everything, or I lose my companies or my house or whatever, I've got such a strong work ethic and, you know, not a big enough ego that I'll go and work in a cafe. I'm going to be fine. So that's usually always how it's driven my fear in business, is I use what I term a red line. So I look at everything that could possibly go wrong when I'm about to invest in a business or expand or buy into something. And I'm like, if it all goes belly up, what will I lose? And if it gets down to a figure that, you know, it's what you're comfortable with, right? But as long as that's not negative, I can always go, like, if I lost my first business, I was 23. If I lost everything, I was going to lose my house, going to lose a lot, but I would be zero, wouldn't be in debt. And I thought, that's okay. I feel all right with that. And so that's how I kind of make my decisions, using my fear to guide me. So how would you, like, what kind of things would you give, like tips and stuff would you give people about how to embrace those fears? Is it about actually saying it out loud and sharing it with others? Does that kind of help, do you think?
I'm a big believer of talking it out and desensitizing. And as you just said before, gee, when you say it like that, it sounds really stupid. Pretty much a lot of our fears are stupid. Another example I'll tell you, and this is what I go through now when I'm thinking about what I'm scared of. I'll go through and go, and what's the worst? So similar, very similar to your red line. This one was, and it's not funny, but it sort of is funny. She wasn't in a great relationship and was thinking about leaving her husband. But then leaving her husband also wasn't happy at work, but thought, I can't leave my work and my husband at the same time. Well, why can't I do that? Well, can't do that because then how do we pay for the house? Right. So can't leave my husband who I don't like, can't leave my job that I hate because I can't lose my house. Okay, why can't I lose my house? Well, probably couldn't afford the mortgage, the size of mortgage that I've got now, so would have to get a smaller house. Okay, so get a smaller house. What's the problem with that? Well, it would be a smaller house. That would be embarrassing that I'd have to tell people I'm in a smaller house. I only need a smaller house because I've got no husband now. All right, so smaller house, and then the kids. So the kids might have to catch a train now to school instead of walking because we'd have to go out of the suburb because I couldn't afford that. Right, okay. So why am I not leaving my husband who's a douche? Oh, because I don't want my kids to have to catch a train. Once again, you go down that thing. It's like, seriously? I'm staying in this relationship and this job to stay in a house that I never really liked anyway, that's too big, with a big mortgage, so my kids can walk to school, but we could buy a house that's smaller around the corner or two stops away and catch a train.
Good to go through that process.
Absolutely, without judgment. And you've got to be able to do it with yourself, right? Because otherwise what happens is you get other people's fears. Because then somebody says, oh, my God, you can't. Do you know how hard it is to be a single mum? You can't leave your husband. That'd be terrible. Or, oh, my God, you earn so much money. You don't, that, you're so great at what you do. You'll never get a job like that. You shouldn't leave. And that's not your fear. That's their fear. So I always sort of say, talk to yourself first, and then you've got to pick who you want to talk this out. You know, speak to people that are confident, that have made brave decisions, that have potentially, inverted commas, lost it all and come back from the brink. And, you know, we never really do lose it all. I mean, what we lose is when we die. So my going thing is, will this kill me?
Yeah, I love it. I think it's really, it's a grounding exercise to go through. And I think as you sort of talk through that, it's that kind of process of asking another question, isn't it? So why that? Why the next thing? Why? Like, just keep asking yourself. And it might be a process where you sit down and write it out, you know, to sit there and really sit in what is your greatest fear right at this moment, and then work through that. And there's the whole kind of research and theory around fear that we're often more scared of the concept or the notion of what could happen rather than the actual action itself. You know, there's so much kind of literature in that if you look at it. It's fascinating, right?
Absolutely, absolutely. And then when you come to leadership, the model that I use for assessment is called the LSI, which is Lifestyles Inventory. And what it says is there's 12 different behaviours, but 8 of those behaviours come out when we are feeling under attack. And so again, that's that sense of fear. And some of those behaviours are behaviours such as reaching out and being aggressive or submissive. So you've got that really aggressive person that comes out and yells at you and blames you and threatens you and says things like, do you know who I am? Who's the boss here, me or you? You know, that sort of behaviour. Then you've got the other side of that defensive behaviour being, okay, whatever you say, Michelle, you know, like kowtowing to you, being dependent, seeking your approval, the victim of peer group pressure, and all that sort of thing. So when I see those behaviours now, whether it's in my personal life or wherever it can be, and apparently I can be quite annoying when I'm like saying to people, what's scaring you now? But what I will say is, you know, what's making you feel under pressure? What's making you feel that you need to defend yourself? Because those behaviours only come out when you're scared of something. And it's fight or flight.
That's exactly right. Yeah, yeah. I think it's ingrained in us. Some stuff I've read on this space is a lot of it does come from our childhood, you know, our formative years and the things that we've been brought up either, like there's, you know, massive kind of trauma that's happened and there are things that we're fearful of, or like you say with your parents, that, you know, what your parents instill on you, it's their fear and they ingrain it in you, you know, growing up. So, you know, how do we combat that? How do we get over those kind of points of fear? What would you recommend? Like, obviously you do coaching in a business sense, but if someone's really going through stuff personally, I'd imagine, you know, counseling would help. As you said, you need to pick who you talk to about this, right?
So, you know, look, I'm not a psychologist. That's a very different skill. And I'm definitely not talking about real, you know, physical trauma or that sort of thing. So I want to be really clear about that. I'm not giving any advice or anything around there. But what I will say is that it's about unbundling that. So when someone gets aggressive when they're being challenged, the question is, why are you getting so angry about that, Michelle? You go, oh, well, he's just rude. You know, he doesn't listen to me just because I'm a woman. Okay, what's actually making you angry? Well, he doesn't listen to me. Like, who doesn't listen to? And as you go through, it will come down to, was he really not listening to you? Or did he just disagree with you? Because maybe it's not that you're a woman. Maybe he just thought you're a deal. Like, and you could have been a man or a woman.
Or he just had a different opinion. Yeah.
He just had a different opinion, and that's okay. And so I'm very clear to say, well, and that's because something happened to you or whatever when you're younger, you got told you're just a girl, don't you know, who are you, blah, blah, blah. And then you create these stories in your head. And I don't believe in those stories, you know, and I believe in questioning those stories and actually asking myself. And I had a coaching session today and this man was telling me all these things. And I said, so where's the evidence of that? And he went, what do you mean? I said, well, you've just given me all these, you know, conclusions, but where's the evidence that this thing's happening? He's like, I haven't looked at it like that. But as he was speaking, it was fact, you know, it was absolute fact what he believed in, but there was actually no evidence. He'd made it all up in his head. And I think that's really important, again, when it comes to fear, right? Is what we're scared of actually real, or are we making them up in our head? And if we are making them up in our head, let's talk about it to realise that actually it's quite funny.
Mm. Yeah, it's not as bad as we think.
It's not. And then you desensitize it. And I'm not saying that, you know, you have one conversation and all of a sudden goes like that. I mean, some of us have got, you know, 20, 30, 40, 50 years of unconscious fears in us that we have to deal with and unbundle. And some of us never, you know, some fears never will be undone. But if we can start having that conversation, imagine the clarity we could get with each other, whether it be a partner, whether it be a child, whether it be, you know, your boss or your peer, like being able to honestly, in Brené Brown's words, show vulnerability, talk about what we're scared of, talk about the downsides, and then get other people to help you with the solution.
She has a fabulous saying where she says, the story I'm telling myself right now, you know, it's about you and I having a conversation. And then so she verbalizes that like to her husband or partner or whatever. And I've heard her say that often in like her podcasts or books and stuff. The story I'm telling myself about this situation right now is, and it's a beautiful way to frame it. It just so resonated with me when I heard her say that. And so it's something I try and use as well, where I'm like in something's going on and there's fear and then I'm like analyzing it as it's happening. I'm thinking, well, this is not real. This is not going on. This has kind of occurred before, and I'm now making a story up about this scenario because of the situation, but actually it could be quite different. And interesting in terms of the work I've done in this space, and obviously I've written a book about death and dying and have dealt with a lot of that. And I've also dealt with my own mortality, but I have always believed that I would die young. And that is because of a legacy of, you know, most of the people in my family having died young, me having cancer, all that kind of stuff. And I've had to do work around that to say, actually, maybe that's not my story. Maybe that's not my destiny. And so, you know, literally breaking that down as you've sort of talked about, and I did it with an executive coach. I wasn't expecting to do that kind of work in my coaching, but it was beautiful to actually, she really worked on me holistically, not just, you know, in the sort of professional sense. And it was groundbreaking, Chris. It really made a difference for me and for me to realize about how that fear, and I don't have a fear of dying, but I just kind of always thought that I would die young. So I guess there's a fear there, and how that drove me. You know, it drove me to be kind of crazy mental with anything I did and like learning everything, embracing stuff. Cause I thought I'm not going to have a lot of time. So I need to do a lot of stuff. And I was like, actually just calm down. It's okay. I might still die young, but that's okay. You know,
but you might not. Yeah. Yeah. I got a friend in the same boat and I used to think, God, he's so frivolous. And cause he thought he was going to die young. And, now he's in his 50s like me and he's got not one cent, and I laugh. And he said, yes, but I did enjoy those $3,000 pair of pants.
I wish I was more frivolous like that. I love it. That's good. So coming back then to peace on people's greatest fears, are there ones that you've heard that you're really surprised about, like that you think, why is someone scared of that?
No, it's not for me to judge, and you never know why someone's scared. The most common ones, though, are, of course, imposter syndrome. And I'm going to say it's for men and women. You know, women will talk about it more, but men feel it just as much. They just don't talk about it as much. So I want to put that out there to all the ladies that are listening. Don't just think it's you. Pretty much every person that I coach has some sense of it at some point, that they're going to be caught out.
Do you think guys just cover it up better? You know, it's that whole thing around a woman won't go for a role unless she's 90% there, whereas a guy's like, right, I'm going to have a crack at it. But that doesn't mean that they're not fearful. I guess they just, step forward and dive in a bit.
I think there's part about the physicality. Actually, I read something that was very interesting around this. I'm not sure if I agree with it or not, but I'm going to put it out there anyway. What they said is that from cave person days, women have had to be a bit submissive and appealing to survive, because cave men physically got the food. So, you know, women did the gathering, but the men got the animals, the hunters, and they're also physically stronger. So if a woman was not obedient or not attractive, she would be shunned out of the tribe, but she could also be bashed and, you know, beaten. And she had to do this not just for herself, but quite often for her children. So it's actually a learnt behaviour to be more submissive and more cautious and more accommodating to ensure that they eat, basically, and survive. Now, I'm not sure if that totally, you know, I totally agree with that in today's age, but it's an interesting thing to think about how we've been groomed into that over, you know, many, many centuries of that sort of behaviour to survive. I mean, sadly, that's still the situation for many women.
In many countries, yeah, unfortunately.
So it's an interesting thing. So I think women are more used to speaking about it, obviously. Well, men can't talk about it because they'll be teased. And in some ways, I don't know, is there this thing that says, I don't really want my husband to always be telling me how you know, he feels imposter syndrome and how he doesn't think he deserves me and he's not good enough at his job? Like, I don't know, do we want that? I don't know. And I'm not judging it. I think there's a whole lot of socialisation over centuries and centuries that has created this, but I would love men to speak more about it. And what I'm really hoping, and I'm trying to do it as much as I can in my household, is teaching my boys, because you've got to teach them young, right? You've got to teach them to say things that they feel, whether you want to hear them or not. And as a woman, you've got to be able to accept things that are said. And you know, my classic is the other week, my little one, you just saw him before, said, "Mum, I love you, but I don't really like you at the moment."
What was the reason behind that?
Oh, I don't know. I did something annoying, as a mother does. I don't know. I probably yelled at him, embarrassed him in front of his kids, friends. I don't know. I did something. So the one hand was, "You can't say that. You don't." And then the other hand is like, "Actually, that is so valid. It's so valid, you know, that you can love and adore someone, but you can actually not like their behavior at that particular time, or like what they're doing, or like what they're saying, right?" And we've got to raise children, all children, to be able to say that. But then as women, we've got to be able to say, "I'm going to take that," you know, and we're going to teach our girls to be able to take that information back from men and other people as well, right? We've got to be able to have that open conversation.
Yeah, and I think creating that space, isn't it, for all of us, for the children in our lives, as well as our mates and our colleagues, to you know, really provide that safe space, and you know, for them to be more vulnerable and to share those fears with us. So, some wonderful pieces of advice there, Chris. I've loved it. Thank you. Is there anything you'd like to finish up in terms of actually getting people to embrace their fears and you know, be more powerful in their lives more? You know, jump into it.
I just think, ask yourself, not once, not twice, but they say seven times, maybe go further, you know, what's the worst that can happen? And if it's only ego, if it's only reputation's important, but if it's only, oh, they'll think that I am such and such, then who really cares what other people think? You know, like, it's what you think. And then what is your fear? What is it actually costing you? Is it costing you enjoyment? Is it costing you love? Is it costing you promotion? Is it costing you, you know, happiness? What
yeah, to live a full life. Yeah.
Yeah, because I think when you question what something's costing you, the opportunity cost of not moving forward, the opportunity cost of staying in loveless marriages, horrible bosses, valueless roles where you get lots of money but you spend it all at psychiatrists and drinking, like, what is the point of that, right? What is it? I think question yourself and be honest with yourself.
Yeah, beautiful cap there. Like, just love it. Thank you so much, Chris. It's been awesome to talk to you today.
You are very welcome.
If you'd like to learn more about today's guest, you'll find all the show notes and interesting links on our website, wabisabiseries.com. If you'd like to hear more unexpected conversations, please subscribe to the series, follow us on our socials, or grab one of my books. And if you're in a generous mood, I'd love you to share the episode, or maybe even rate, review, and comment on the series. It really does make a difference. Until next time, be sure to claim your own piece of wabi-sabi and walk proud in your perfect imperfection.